And we're officially live. So,
oh boy, I'm alive.
Yeah, you got anything to say before I roll that beautiful bean footage?
Roll the beautiful what? What'd you call it?
You never heard the Bush's Baked Beans commercial back in the day with the dog? And it says, roll that beautiful baked bean footage. Never heard that? Oh, wow. Well, if you're listening to the show at the moment, we're live. This is what you have heard, though.
Shut up and sit down.
That's right. Boom.
Now that I did hear.
Yes, we're all very familiar with that. Anyways, welcome to Dope and Dharma. This is the Dharma Time edition. As always, he is the Dope Doctor and I am the Dharma Guy. For those of you who are longtime listeners to Dharma Time, you might have noticed that intro sounded a wee bit different. That's because we are moving everything over to Dope and Dharma, make it a little bit more consistent. Yeah. So therefore, if you are interested in hearing what we have to say about a myriad of other topics, you can find us at Dope and Dharma. You can go to our Facebook page. You can go to all those different social media. Matter of fact, I think we even have one on here. I think we have a banner. Here we go. Put that banner up there. Bam. Yeah. See that? If you're watching this live, look below. You can see that's how you can follow everything that we're doing. But we have a Dharma Time show today. However, there is a topic that's been floating around at the moment. It's pretty big news here in the States. It's I say here in the States because we have a lot of people watching, apparently, from India.
Yeah.
There's some Germany, so I feel compelled now to acknowledge their presence.
What's up, Alemania? What's up, India? How you doing?
Yeah, right. On Friday, on our We the Middle show where we talk about political things. If you have an interest in that, then make sure to tune in live on Friday, and we will be discussing the Supreme Court ruling for the Roe v. Wade case. If you're not currently following us, it's just look up Dope and Dharma on any podcasting platform or find us on YouTube. So,
and for those of you in other countries, it's for when you want to take a baby out of a person prematurely before the baby's ready.
Okay. You just went straight there. Anyways, I don't know how do you follow that? My mom commented Bush's baked beans, so she knew what I was talking about.
Hey, Kathy, how you doing? I just woke up from a nap, man. You know, I mean, I had a good nap right now.
That's all right. I just got stood up by my my kid's teacher for a parent teacher conference that I requested, mind you, and she stood me up. So that's a good time.
And again, for those of you out of the country, that's for, you know, he got stood up by a person that claims to be underpaid, yet doesn't show up when she's supposed to.
Yeah, right.
Now I just pissed off all the teachers. So I'm doing really well so far on this episode.
Well, this is making everybody mad today. All right. So today's Dharma Time is interesting to me because there's a wide range of directions we could take it. So I'm curious to see where it goes. And if you're watching this live on either YouTube, Facebook, or Twitch, by all means, drop some comments and let us know what your thoughts are as the show progresses, because I really would like to hear, you know, everybody's thoughts, because I do believe that today's topic is something that we've all at one point in our lives struggled with, and some people might still be. I don't know. And it's not just a young person thing. It's not just a financial thing or race or religion. It's a human thing. We all at one point or another deal with this, and it's seeking, right? More specifically, kind of what I'm referring to is seeking love, seeking admiration, seeking a good time, seeking acceptance. I'm watching it with my kids. I'm watching it with just other people who I might be connected to in various ways, you know, social media, whatnot. And many people put their struggles out there for everybody to see. I think that's their own way of seeking some sort of validation, maybe. But what I'm noticing, right, what I'd like to talk about, and it fits right in with spirituality, because obviously the Four Noble Truths really touch on this in a major way. But I'll get to that comparison later on. This seeking behavior, right? It makes us, like, I've noticed that it's such a strong pull that we'll put ourselves through so many hardships and so many red flags and completely disregard the pain that that's causing in our lives with the hope that we'll obtain whatever it is that we're seeking, right? Like, how many people have struggled, you know, with things, right? Or how many people in a really bad relationship where there's maybe physical violence or something, but they still think that they love the person or they love them back and they'll change? Or how many, you know, how many people are so intent on being accepted that they put themselves in bad situations or they do things that aren't really them in order to be accepted? How many people run themselves into debt because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses, right? Like, they want so badly to fit in with this group that they'll put themselves in a bad financial situation just to be seen as an equal, you know, or how many people will do things to their look or their bodies or whatever to fit in, or, you know, how many people put up with things that they shouldn't put up with from friends or loved ones because they're so desperately wanting that value that they get from that, right? And obviously, you know, spoiler alert, it comes from within, right? I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's the point that we're going to drive home, I think, is we have to get it from within. But, and I want your input on this as we go through it, obviously, because you're going to come from an educated kind of therapist perspective, right? It's one thing for me to sit there and spout it, but, you know, you got letters behind your name that in theory, you know how to do this, right? So we're going to test your knowledge here today.
Uh-oh.
What I'm getting at is everybody's
going to learn today.
That's right. Say it with your chest, boy. You know, people say you find it from within, but what does it even mean? Like, how do you even do that, right? I don't hear a lot of explanations or blueprints or paths to actually do that. And so I think spirituality is key, but even that, what does that mean? Like, how do you do that? And so I think that's what we should talk about today, is kind of what it means and how do we actually even apply that, right? You have any immediate thoughts on this?
Well,
Celsius, by the way.
Hey, listen, people, can you please send him some hate email?
One a day,
because
now.
No, he's not. This guy just had heart issues. He's not supposed to be drinking caffeine. And then he's drinking a Celsius. And his mother's watching. So you would think that for sure she would get all over you.
She knows. She knows.
It's horrible. you're not supposed to be drinking caffeine, brother.
I'm seeking alertness is what I'm seeking. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As an example.
All right. We'll see. But the immediate thing that comes to mind is, first of all, the comparisons. That unfortunately we'd like to compare ourselves to other people.
Yeah.
You know, so whenever we're feeling some type of way, whether it be good, bad, indifferent, we tend to view others that may be feeling the way that we wish we were feeling or doing the way they should be doing and measure ourselves up against them. But not usually towards the ones that are not doing as well as you. We'd like to measure ourselves based on people that we feel
yeah.
are doing better than us.
Yeah.
So, in this country, that's why we joke around a lot here, that we have first world problems, right? And
right.
So, especially now that's going to put it in a whole new perspective, by the way, now that you said that we got these listeners in these third worlds, you know, not Germany, you're not third world, but, you know, some of these other countries that you had mentioned are third world. And so now when we sit here and complain about these things, they're like, Jesus, you're complaining about right. something that's normal here. And so putting that in perspective is going to be real important, because when you say seeking, I mean, one of my favorite books of all time was about seeking. And it was the Siddhartha. When I was in college and they asked me to read Siddhartha, at first I was like, oh, really? But it was a small, little skinny little book, which was the positive, right?
For those of you who don't know Siddhartha, it would be the Buddha, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Siddhartha and Gautama. It was my favorite book of all time. And to this day, it's the only book I ever recommend to people other than Hop on Pop by Dr. Seuss. So,
still haven't read it, by the way.
Siddhartha or Hop on Pop?
Siddhartha. I don't even have it, but I need to.
It's yeah, it was my favorite book of all time. Whatever, and I can't really tell you why other than that time of my life where I read it. It just seemed to ring really true, because this was a person that was from a good family, relatively well, had a good little future ahead of him, but he chose to give it all away just to go on this journey, this path of seeking. And that's how I felt. That's how I felt, because I left the home. I left, you know, I was young. I left home on my 18th birthday. went out to California, and although it was for good reasons that I felt, it was still like, why are you leaving a cush, easy environment at home to go out there and try these things, right? And right. So I never equated the two like I was on a Siddhartha journey, because I didn't feel like I was. But when I read the book, it was tapping into that, the searching part of what I was doing at that age, is what I'm saying. Right. In other words, that searching. And like you said, sometimes we search and we look for it in connectivity with other people, whether it be physically, sexually. We seek it in food. We seek it in drugs. We seek it in alcohol. We seek it in a lot of different things. And unfortunately, yep. You know, every bit of book that anyone's ever written on this subject says it was right there the whole time.
Exactly.
Mirror, you got to do it with yourself. But yet we keep doing it, right? I mean, we've taught this for generations that it's right there the whole time. It's right in front of you. You got to start with the man in the mirror. No, I'm not trying to quote Michael Jackson. But it starts with you. And yet that's not what we do instinctually. Instinctually, we look outside of ourselves.
Yeah.
So that was my initial thought.
No, and I would agree with that assessment. But first off, your mic is popping quite a bit. I don't know if there's something you could do on your end on that one, but I don't know if you're aware of it. Yeah.
No, I
would agree with that, right? Like, well, first off, I haven't read Siddhartha, but I think for me, that was actually what drew me to spirituality, and more specifically for me, Buddhism as well,
right.
Was that sense of completeness, right?
Right.
Like, I guess the only word I've ever been able to use that I felt satisfied in using is peace. I didn't have this peace, and I was looking to get that peace outside of myself with things or stuff or people, and it ended up being within. Like, it was all my outlook. It was all the way I approached it. And when I found spirituality and I started living by the precepts of the Buddhist philosophy, being the Four Truths and the Eightfold Path, for me, it didn't change my thought process on things, but it changed my response to things. I no longer felt the need to react the way I was. And in doing so, that just, it brought around the peace. And the further down that path I've gotten, the more peace I've gotten, and the more I enjoy it, the more I like it, the more I realize some of those external things that I was looking for wasn't really giving me what I wanted, right? But I do find it astonishing, though, that we as a species, right? I can't speak for other species. I haven't really looked that far into it. But it like, I have dogs, right? And it seems like if there's a loud bang or something my dog doesn't like, he'll go the other way. Like, he doesn't typically overcome that to get even a treat, right? If you put a treat out there, but you're banging around, he's probably not going to come to it. So my immediate knee-jerk reaction is it feels, and I could be wrong on this, but it feels like we're one of the only species that will do that, that will knowingly do harm to ourselves for the hope of a treat at the end of it, and whatever that treat might be. And it's painful to watch when you have loved ones going through it, right? And when you have friends or family or kids or whomever, it gives you pause, right? Because we do... like, we have so many people that we see going through these amazing hardships. For instance, you know, I'll keep it somewhat lighthearted. When you and I were doing the pay program where we would help, you know, like, basically, for those of you who don't know, it's essentially, for lack of a better explanation, it's semi first time offenders who got caught with some sort of drug paraphernalia, and they were told either go to jail or go to this program. So of course they chose the program, and you got to talk to them. Well, every single one of those kids was under the impression that, like, weed was so great. Like, they would sit there and argue with you forever if you would let them about how great weed was. It was like the most amazing thing on the planet. And it was like, they didn't even see or understand, like, yeah, but that got you right here. Like, you're here with me. You know, it got you like, look at all the life is already showing you red flags of what you're going to get more of if you stay on this path. And they simply just ignored it. They just overlooked it because they wanted it so bad. They wanted whatever that feeling was. And I don't mean the high feeling. I mean the sense of acceptance, the sense of validation, whatever it was touching a button inside of them. They were willing to give up whatever they had to give up, be looked at whatever way they need to be looked at, have a criminal record, be ostracized by their family, get in trouble, because they just wanted to keep doing it. And so, you know, we could argue all day long about the fact that it was a drug in their system or whatever. But the simple fact is we do that with other things. You know, even if we want to break it down to just as simple as right now, I'm having caffeine, right? And I may or may not supposed to have it. That's debatable. But the fact it is that I'm tired of feeling a certain kind of way and I'm willing to take the risk. That's what it is. Other people out there, you know, they know that they shouldn't have, I don't know, cake, ice cream, pizza. They still do it anyways because they want it. So this, we're like, it seems as a species, we're so drawn to stuff that regardless if it's bad for us, we still choose to do that. And I think the way to solve that would be something internal, right? And I think that's the thing that people hear all the time, but they don't know how to do that or what that even looks like.
But don't you think it's ironic that you're actually choosing to talk about this on the day that you're drinking a Celsius?
Maybe I'm trying to prove a point.
When your cardiologist said not to?
Yeah, but my endocrinologist said it was fine. And I looked up the data. See, I'm justifying it.
Yeah. You trust an endocrinologist over a cardiologist?
So far, yeah, from what I've gotten. I've got more information in one visit with the endo than like five visits with the cardiologist. But
it's because the only time you saw your cardiologist is when you were in an emergency bed.
Yeah. Well, I've seen his PA twice. But anyways, no, I think it's just, it's weird. Like, we'll do active harm to ourselves with this idea that there's better out there that we're going to achieve.
Right.
Like, outside of ourselves for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't tell you how many, I've known women in my life who are involved in like domestic situations where they're getting, you know, hit and beat, but they're so in love with the idea that this person loves me or I have value with them. I belong. They can't see right in front of their face. Right. It was what it reminds me of is when you and I, when I first started like dipping my toes in this world that we're in right now, I can't remember the scenario. There was a situation. I can't remember what it was. I'm supposed to talk to somebody. And I had no clue on how to address it with this person. Because for me, it made total sense. Like, dude, there's all these red flags. What are you doing? And you were the one who told me to get them to kind of see that they're going against their own value system. And that was paramount, dude. That was such a huge kind of moment, right? And I've used that, I don't know, so consistently ever since. Like, you know, when somebody says to me, oh, well, this is helping me, blah, blah, blah. Is it? Like, you know, when my daughter had this friend that was really, really bad for her. And she kept telling me how great she was. I was like, but is she? Like, really? If you really look at it, is she? And that's how I helped her kind of see the error of certain situations. But it's incredibly hard, right? I mean, that's part of what you do for a living for 30 years, man, is trying to help people stop the seeking behavior. Right. And it is hard, man. In your situation, obviously, with the drugs and alcohol, it makes it even worse because, their brain is hijacked with the substance. But what led them to the substance oftentimes in the first place was this intense desire to seek something outside themselves, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the hard part. The hard part is that some people think that it's a real quick, easy answer, right? Like, you should know what you're seeking. What do you really? I don't know what I'm seeking. If you would ask me early on, hey, Louis, why do you smoke pot? Why do you do cocaine? Why do you party? You know, why do you do those things? Because I like it. I mean, it was that easy for me as an answer. Right. You know, I didn't go back, you know, I didn't go into my childhood and look for issues, and nor would I have wanted to blame that. I didn't seek these trauma events that had happened to me as a child and connect to dots. I viewed it like that was my normal. So I didn't know any different. So these things that you may call traumatic to me were my normal. So how would I know that I'm using these inappropriate coping skills or this escapism to cope and deal with life? I didn't know that.
Right.
So it is important to break everything down to what you do believe. Then what can you believe and what you do think? And when you start to get to know a person and just get their own personal value system, like you just brought up, or their rules on the world, because everybody has these little rules, right? Even rule breakers have rules.
Of course.
A matter of fact, rule breakers have more rules than the normal person.
unwritten, you know, ones,
because if you break their rules towards them, you disrespect them, you treat them a certain way, then they're going to use that as validation to disrespecting you back, or hurting themselves or not listening, right? Because you talk like this to me, you acted like this to me. You said so. They have all kinds of rules that nobody knows. Like, they don't come with a manual.
No,
you know. So you have to figure it out. But it's important to get to know somebody. So let's take a pause on that for a second and just ask yourself. I mean, how long did you spend just getting to know you? Just the simple things. You know how we kind of see these movies that you see these couples and they're early getting together and dating and they're asking each other questions like, what's your favorite musician and what's your favorite color? Real simple things like that.
Right.
How many of us even actually did that with ourselves? I mean, really? I mean, you may think you even know the answers to yourself, but are they the real answers? I mean, maybe the answer you want to give, and then you look around, and that's not your real answer. For instance, yeah. there were times where I thought I knew what my favorite color was, and then I look at what color I put around me or right. what colors I tend to wear, and it's different than what I say my favorite color is. Now, so it makes you ask, let's define favorite then. Right. Is it your favorite color because that's the color you like to look at the most? Like, you like to see it? But if you like to see it, then how come you don't wear it? Or you didn't color your walls that color? Or you don't buy cars that color? Like really right. detailed understanding of what is it you like and why do you like it and where do you like it and how does it make you feel? And when you start kind of unpacking your own self, you might be surprised at some of the answers of things that you like. And you might start seeing that some of the things that you say you like, you know, it's because that's the only things you were exposed to, but it's right. you have a limited exposure in certain areas. And then you start getting exposed to a broader sense of some things. And you might find you like other things as well. For instance, I'm a real basic eater. So no matter what I'm exposed to, I kind of come back to tacos, pizza, tacos. Pork chops. You know what I mean? And sure. it's Taco Tuesday.
That it is.
Those are the things that I tend to come back to, the real basics, right?
Right.
But it doesn't mean I won't enjoy other things. I've tried other things. I've explored other things. But I tend to come back to some basics. And most of us are like that. And so what about with people? Do you tend right. to you explore other types of people, but maybe you just keep connecting with the same basic pork chops and tacos and pizza? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like you said earlier, you know, it might be that caffeinated beverage that's going to give you the heart attack. It might be that type of food that might give a person an ulcer, yet they continue to eat it. What is it you're really seeking? Because you're not seeking additional life. You're not seeking physical comfort. So what comfort is it giving you? What do you think really drives you? Because it's not sustainability. It's not long-lasting, healthy life. Because if it was, we'd all be eating like broccoli and crap like that, right?
Yeah.
Seriously. Well, I mean, we'd be eating sure. completely different. If we really understood our health, there's no way some of us would eat the way we eat.
We'd all right. be exercising. We'd be drinking right. nothing but water. We'd all, right. yeah, of course.
So what are we seeking? We're seeking different things. I got to admit, I seek instant pleasure. I like a lot of instant pleasures because right. I feel like I've taken away some of the instant pleasures that were very harmful to me. And I'm just a brat. I'm a moody little brat that I don't want to give up all my stuff. You know what I mean? I got my favorite toys and don't mess sure. with them. I want to play with these toys until you can prove to me that I can't play with these toys anymore. And I really feel like mom and dad are going to come down and take these toys eventually. So I'm going to play with them as long as I can. And that's how I feel about spicy food. I feel like one of these days, one of these darn physicians are going to tell me you can't yeah. eat that anymore. And so until that day, I'm going to eat the shit out of it. You know what I mean? I mean, really. Sure. And so, but what is that about you? You know, like, what is that about me? Well, I'm really just an immature person. I'm very immature when it comes to certain needs and wants. Now,
right.
then you take that same complex person that we all are, right? Because we're real simple in some senses, and then we get real complex sometimes. When I'm helping someone, I'm able to be a little bit more broad, and I'm so much more loving and empathetic towards other people than I am to myself.
Of course,
I'm not trying to be a martyr or Trinity. I'm not trying to be better than or holier than thou, because we expose it on this show. We tell the truth on this show. You see our flaws. If you watch us if you listen to us, we tell you what our flaws are. We're not trying to be better than you and act better than you. We're just human. But when we're helping another person, and you guys can all attest to this, we tend to give better advice than when we tell ourselves. You know,
well, I think that's humans in general.
Right, typically. Right, yeah. Right. But the really good stuff is the stuff we live by example, right? And here's what we, you know, Trinity and I do, I think, really well by live by example. I think we treat other people really well compared to the other options available to us. Do we treat everybody well? No. But do we treat most people well and with respect and with love and compassion and care? And if you need something, we're there for you to a degree. Yes, 100%. And I think that's what we teach more than anything, is that connectivity. So hopefully in this whole process of growing up, and I'm only 52, so I'm still a little kid, is this needs over wants thing that, you know, that's where we got Now Matters More Foundation, right? The now stands for needs over wants. It's like, what is it you need compared to what is it you want? And what are you willing to do to get what you need? And what is it you're willing to do to get what you want? Just take some time out and just pause and write it down somewhere. Just write it down, map it out. Use a whiteboard if you have to. Use a chalkboard if you have to. I don't care. But somehow get a visual attached to what you do compared to what you think and what you say. And see if you're happy with it and okay with it. If you are, great. Then you're in the boat with us. That you know you're being immature when you're being immature. You know you're being you know you're going against it when you know you're going against it. But at least you know. But at least you know.
I think that's a big part, right? And so there's another take on this too, right? Mm-hmm. So for me personally, one of the things that kind of like rocked my world a lot when I got into the spiritual side of things was, so part of the Eightfold Path, you know, the first one, or the Four Truths, first one being that, you know, pain is a part of life.
Right.
Right. And I think that is something we all, we could do a whole show on that. I think we have in the past, but we cannot just accept this concept. Like, we know it to be true in our heart of hearts, but we don't want to accept it. And that is, pain is a part of life. And pain in this instance is anything that we deem undesirable, no matter what it is.
Right.
Like, because in the example that I always use of somebody to come in and say, my life should be perfect, blah, 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 we'd all look at that person like they're nuts. No. And yet every single time something doesn't go the way we wanted it to, what do? We get upset, we get frustrated, we get depressed, we get angry. But like, so this, we start out with an expectation of, this is going to go the way I thought it should go. That's typically how we go. And then when I got to the second, well, go ahead. Was it Marissa?
No, I was going to say, I stole it from Albert Ellis, the masturbation. I stole that from Albert Ellis, the great.
We did a whole show on that. But Marissa did make a comment how it seems like you've been cussing more since she's been down here.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know.
That's okay. Bullshit, Marissa. That's bullshit.
Yeah, we're on the internet, man. We can do what we want. But anyways, so moving on to the second one, I think the second one really encapsulates what this is all about. At its most core, right? Its most basic idea, and that is, you know, we cause our own suffering through our aversion to pain and our clinging to pleasure. That right there at its core is what the problem is. We feel a sense of uncomfortable and we don't want to feel that, so we seek to get rid of it. You know, be it, I'm going to avoid these things, or I'm going to be drawn to these things, I'm going to seek out all these things that takes away that uncomfortable feeling. And at the end of the day, the problem with that is you can't. Right. Like, you might temporarily do that, but it's not sustainable. It's impermanent. Your solution will not last. And so I think that's where the key is. And that's why the third part of the truth is my absolute favorite still to this day, after all these years later. And it still blows my mind when you really, like, when you hear it, it's like, okay, cool. But when you really stop to think about it, it blows your mind. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to do that. You don't have to seek out all these things. You don't have to get your sense of value through other people. You don't have to get your sense of accomplishment or joy or whatever through these things. Right. You don't have to, right? Like, you can try, and that's the normal thing that we all try, but the real power comes when you realize you can't.
Right.
And when you realize you get it from within, with acceptance of who you are and what's around you. Like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say something. I mean, and that's not saying you don't have to go through what you're going through. You absolutely have to go through what you're going through, sure, because some of those things are external, like they're out of your control. When Trinity's saying you don't have to suffer, he's not saying that you don't have to go through that event, because you might be thinking, yeah, I do. She lives here. Yeah. But what he's saying is the suffrage, the suffering part, the suffrage, the emotional attachment to the emotion, that's a choice. And I think that's the hard part, though, Trinity, is what about your emotional stuff is by choice? In some people would say, well, I can't choose. You know, I love her. I love the person. You know, I can't, sure, you know, I can't choose who to love. Well, maybe not who to love, but how to love, or what that means to you, and what's attached to that word for you.
Well, the example that I always use, I try to break it down in its most simplest form. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that if you walked out and you had a flat tire in your car, right, you know, there was a point in my life prior to spirituality where that would have pissed me off, man. Like, I would have walked out. Like, are you kidding me? I would have immediately gone through, like, this has ruined my whole day. I can't afford this. Like, I would have had all these problems, and it would have been the worst thing on the planet. And I would have had a million people all behind me saying, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing, right? And we've all grown accustomed to this idea that that's, yeah, it's bad, and you get mad. Okay, well, it's not, first of all, it's not bad for the person who gets paid to fix flat tires. Mm. But secondly, you don't have to get angry about it. You can just accept the fact, yeah, this sucks. I would prefer it didn't happen. But now, let me fix it and move on with my day. It's just an inconvenient thing that has happened. I don't have to have the mental turmoil. It doesn't have to ruin my entire day. I don't have to now pay that forward to everybody I come across. And I think that is the key right there, that a lot of people just don't want to address, because, frankly, it feels better not to sometimes. I'm going to be honest. It feels great. Like, anger and frustration is intoxicating, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter how centered and peaceful I become, I still have moments where there's a situation in front of me and I knowingly choose the most unskillful way. Why? Because it feels good sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, and afterwards I think back, like, yeah, that's, you know, and I'll have to apologize and I'll have to eat crow or whatever. But in that moment, I want the intoxication. I want to feel this. But I'm aware of it now. You know,
I got a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got a question. Do you pout more privately or around people?
Probably around people.
Me too.
Yeah, because I want them to see it. I want them to know I'm pouting.
Yeah, and that's a real intellectual way to think it. And I'll tell you why. Because I notice that I'll react more around people. And different people will bring a different reaction or more of a reaction around me. If I'm alone, that there's none of that. I mean, I talk to myself alone.
Don't we all?
I don't get angry alone. I notice that. Yeah. I don't get pissed off alone. Nothing pisses me off when I'm by myself. Nothing. It's like, no matter what it is, that's bullshit. But it's a calm, right? You know. Sure. But if there's people there and something happens, it magnifies it.
Right.
You know. For me.
Sure.
So that's why I asked the question. So that's a question that maybe you guys can ask yourselves, is do you find yourself getting more emotional around people or less around people? And I'm not saying I know what that means, other than, you know, we can always dig into it depending on what emotion we're talking about. Right. But because the Trinity and I suffer the same emotion, which is just outburst and anger, is the only other emotion I think we had for years. Yeah. You know, that's why I asked him. You know, there's other people that have all these other things and they feel it alone, right? The sadness, depression, those kinds of emotions and stuff. And they feel that more alone than with people. Alone, I didn't feel any of that stuff like that. Like, I felt different then. I felt a lot of no sense of belonging for a very, 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 very long time. But my way of dealing with not belonging is just saying, well, I didn't want to belong with you anyway. I did the awkward. I did the stuff you thought I couldn't do or nobody would do. And I got a kick off that. I gained strength through that.
It feels good. Well, but therein lies the rub though, right? Like, and I think that to me is one of the biggest lessons when it comes to seeking is it's okay. Mm-hmm. Marissa said, I thought I gave myself expert advice when I talked to myself. can't imagine being the dope doctor. but I think therein lies the rub, right? I think that's the most profound concept that we're trying to get across today. And that is, it's okay, right? It's okay to feel these things. When it becomes not okay is when you try to desperately push them away and not feel it. It's futile. You can't do it. And that's where the suffering comes in, because you're suffering at your inability to not feel the uncomfortableness, or you're suffering at your inability to only feel positivity and good stuff the entire time. So like, for instance, my 10-year-old son, who will be 11 actually on the 5th, he is learning now. Like, I'm trying to teach him how to like lose gracefully, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're playing a game together or something. And when he starts to lose, he gets really mad. Like,
does he break the controller? He throw it
back. When he was younger, he was. He rages out. He gets really mad and very, very angry, right? And so I pull him to the side. I said, look, buddy, and it's very, very important. I tell him, it's okay to be mad, right? Yeah, it sucks to lose. Nobody likes losing. I don't like losing. It's not okay to lose your stuff over it. It's not okay to have these outbursts and act it all out and let it kind of consume you, because you're taking a temporary feeling and you're letting it, you know, stay around. Let that feeling of frustration, anger, whatever it is, come over you, but then let it go, right? And I think that that is the most important thing that I can get across today, is these feelings of not belonging, these feelings of worry, anxiety, frustration, fear, anger, whatever it is. They're all okay. That's a part of the human experience that we're all going through. It's okay to feel that. Don't push them away. Don't try to get rid of them. Don't try to avoid them. Allow them to be there and then allow them to go, because it's temporary. This idea that you can live this existence with zero pain and zero frustration and zero annoyance or zero whatever, that's what's causing your suffering. That's why you're doing these things. That's why you're seeking, because you have this idea that there's this utopian existence out there somewhere where you experience nothing crappy or nothing that didn't go the way you thought. Go ahead.
I got another question for you then, because we're talking about like looking for love, right? Which makes me think of Urban Cowboy for some reason.
Okay.
That's an 80s movie reference, right? John Travolta, looking for love in all the wrong places. When you found Angel, were you looking? Were you looking for Angel?
No, I was looking for a friend with benefits. And so was she.
Did you find that?
Yes.
Did you find a friend with benefits?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Good.
Yeah. Neither one of us were looking for that. Neither one of us were looking for anything serious. We were just, you know, young. We were attracted to one another, and we were going to do what adults do.
And I can attest to that, because Trinity used to come on this show. Yes. As a matter of fact, for those of you that don't know, so he was a co-host on The Couch Live. These are the early days of being a co-host on The Couch Live, where he would just rip into marriage, man. Just rip into it, man. I'd be like, dude, you have no idea what marriage is if that's the way you talk about it. Because he would like talk about it like it was the worst thing on earth. And I was like, you have no idea how good it is. I don't want it. I want nothing to do with it.
I didn't, for full disclosure, I didn't want kids back in the day either.
Yeah. And then one weekend, he says, I'm going to Vegas, and he takes off. Now, mind you, I didn't even know he was dating somebody. I didn't even know he was dating somebody.
I had to have known.
No, you never.
I swear we had those conversations.
Please stop. Please stop, because you're a liar. God. No, you did not tell me. That is a liar. Because he left and he got married over the weekend, and he didn't. And I was like, wait a minute. Number one, there was two things that happened that weekend that freaked me out. Number one, there was a picture with him in jeans. I had never seen him in jeans in my life. Yeah. I was like, I didn't even know you owned a pair of jeans. And two, you were married. And I was like, what? Did you get married? And I was joking. I think I was joking. I was like, did you get married in one of those Elvis chapels or something? He goes, yeah.
Well, I got married in a drive-thru in Vegas. but see, even in that instance, right, what drew me to her was
Marissa says
she remembers the marriage announcement on the show.
It was funny.
Yeah, here I am. What is it? 8 years, right. I think? Something like that.
Right. So I bring that up because I didn't either, man. A matter of fact, when I met Dana, it was the early years of my – I was in a severe abstinence phase, man. I was trying to because I remember I went to a meeting and
– I never had one of those.
No. Listen to the whole story. So I remember going to a meeting. I said, you know, I got to get off drugs. You know, I got to stop being a
criminal. And so I was trying to stop doing criminal activity because I had been successful at being off drugs for like a year and a half, but I couldn't stop finding bad stuff to do. I just could not. So I had come here to Florida and I went to a 12-step meeting and the person says, well, all right, so you did this and then you still did this. And so convinced me to mentally go in an abstinence period where you don't go out with women either, because apparently women were driving me a certain way. Right. And I was like, all right, I quit women too. So I was trying to focus on that. So I found this 40 something year old Betty. When I got here, now mind you, I was 20 years old. So I found a 40-something year old Betty that was part of my plan. So if I would just be with this 40-year-old Betty, there's no way we're going to be in a relationship, but I would use her physically. She would use me and we were good. That was it. But I was on an abstinence period other than that. See, I made my own rules. So all these little Floridian chicks that I wasn't used to were not used to seeing a Latino like me in the Clearwater. And it was hard. It was hard, but I was no women. And there was Dana. Not only was Dana the most beautiful woman I ever saw, but she was in a relationship for 4 years with this dude. 4 years, man. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I know she's flirting with me. I know I can get with this chick. But, man, I'm not trying to be that guy, man. I'm trying to not be that guy. You know what I mean? I don't want to go out with attached women again. I got to have rules. I got to have boundaries. Plus, you know, I didn't even ever had a girlfriend up to that point. They were just, we used each other. I found women who want to use guys, and I was the guy that wanted to use them. It was mutual understanding.
Right.
But, dude, from the first second I met Dana, my heart felt different. I felt different. I felt all the stuff that, you know, like, do you remember Happy Days? The Fonz was one of my favorite characters of all times. Yeah, yeah. And he would go, like, he couldn't say the word love. I felt that stupid around her. I felt like, dude, I immediately went home and told my brother about her. I've never told my brother about any chick that I ever saw in my life. I immediately said, I know I feel for this woman. I know it. I'm going to marry this woman. I had dreamt about her. I had seen her in dreams. I said, that's the one that I had seen in my dreams. It's crazy. And I wasn't looking. I really wasn't. I was on this. I was supposedly on a serious abstinence thing. I wasn't even cursing. Marissa brings up cussing. I wasn't even cursing. That's one of Dana's favorite part of the story is that I used to, you know, she'll tell my kids. She goes, oh, no, he would even say I'm gave up cursing, too. I wouldn't even curse around her. But that didn't last. that one didn't work. But at least I stayed off the cocaine. Hey, I cursed, but I stayed off the cocaine.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, mine was so. Like, yeah, I experienced, you know, similar, I guess, path, right? Like, that was a thing that we had in common from day one. No. I never participated in drugs, but I did everything else that you do. I did all the criminal activity and whatnot. And for me, that's part of it, right? Like, I grew up, you know, my dad was not, you know, the greatest dad. Well, he was a horrible, crappy dad, right? And that left all sorts of issues on me, like abandonment, stuff like that, and anger issues or whatnot. And I didn't want to feel that. And right. So that desire to not feel those feelings led me to do all the things that I was doing, right? I was trying to bury those feelings of not feeling good enough, not feeling loved, whatever it might be. Even though my mom was there and she loved me, the scarring from my dad was unbearable as a kid. And I didn't know what to do with it, but I knew how to feel good. And that's hurting other people or doing crimes that gave me this adrenaline boost of getting away with it and whatnot. And so I just kept on doing those things, try to not feel that. But it didn't work, you know, like when I was not doing those things, and you can't always do those, right? Like at some point you have to sleep or go home or whatever. I would go back to feeling this sucks. And so, you know, like that was my seeking was to feel those things, trying to cover those wounds. Right. And so for me, I didn't get over those things until I accepted the fact, like I did the hardest thing on the planet. And this is what I mean as far as the seeking, right. Is understanding what it is you're seeking and why. And so for me, I realized the solution here was I had to have closure. And I know that's a big buzzword, but I had to have closure. I had to confront this big pink elephant that's sitting here. And then that was my relationship with my dad and those things that I went through. And I did probably I've been through a lot of hard things in my life. I got to say the hardest thing I've ever had to do was forgive my father. That was, I don't know how I did it because I didn't go to therapy or anything. I just knew that that's what had to be done. And so I had to acknowledge the fact that my dad was a human. He wasn't this evil monster that did all these things. He was a flawed human being who took out his stuff in an unskillful way on the people around him. And I experienced it. And I've done the same, not to the extent that he did or to the same people that he did, but we've all done it. We've all had moments of things that we went through that we took it out on somebody else and they didn't deserve it. You know, be it right. You got angry with somebody or you yelled at somebody didn't deserve it. And so I had to forgive him. And when I forgave him, it gave me this, like, it was instantly done. Like the anger and the frustration was just gone. Like I understood it. And so I couldn't be angry anymore. I didn't have any feelings anymore for him, but I let it go in a sense. Right. What'd she say? That should be a whole show. It would help a lot of people. Yeah, of course. I would absolutely do that show.
Maybe like for Father's Day, you should even show a picture of him because it's, you know, I think that'd be yeah. cool. I remember when you sent that to me, I thought that you were kidding.
Yeah. No, that was him. And so my spiritual journey was much the same. I wasn't looking for spiritualness. I was just trying to figure out a way to deal with these stupid people around me that I got tired of. That's really what it was about. But I had to do that moment where I looked around and said, if I'm so great and awesome, why does everything around me suck? And I think that is what we have to put our, like, wrap our heads around, right? Where yes, we're trying to avoid pain and approach pleasure, but right. what does that look like? You know, and for me, that looked like self-medicating, which is what we're going to talk about on Monday on the Couch Live plug. Mm-hmm. It was self-medicating, but I wasn't doing it with substances. I was self-medicating with rage and anger and defensiveness and all these other things. And so, you know, for me, I started out my journey by saying, okay, there's obviously something wrong here. I'm not going to ignore these red flags anymore. Life is showing me that this isn't working. And if I don't want to feel this anyway, then I'm going to have to change something. And that's why I found spirituality. That's why I found Buddhism. I became teachable. And then that's when I found peace. But I never in a million years thought peace is what I wanted or needed, or I don't know. That sounds like such a stupid thing to say until I got it. And then I was like, whoa, this feels really good. Like, I'm good. You know, there's things around me that I don't like, but I'm good, right? And then fast forwarding with a similar situation with you was when I met Angel, I wasn't looking for anybody. I was still kind of like just not interested in that kind of attachment with another human being. I just wasn't there yet. And with her, what made her different was there were certain circumstances that took place that I don't need to get into, but certain things that happened that the way she handled it was different. I've never been with somebody who handled it in such a grown up, like a reasonable way. And it kind of made me look like, wait a minute, maybe there's something different here. And then we both just kind of like progressed from there. And here we are, you know, 8 years later, I guess. But
You shouldn't have done that. Because you got my head question. Is it something you don't want to talk about because it's too personal? Because it'll take up a whole show? Or it's about someone else and not about you? Like, what is the reason not to talk about
it? It's a combination of a lot of the above. I can tell you off air, and then maybe you can help me figure out a way to do it appropriately on air, because I'm not trying to call anybody out or put that out there. I already told you the story, so you just don't remember because your memory sucks.
I had a thing, Trini.
in the back
of my neck.
but anyways, for me, I think that's part of the journey, right? Is understanding that. What did she say? Skipping over things with a counselor actually knows you. Yeah, exactly. No, I don't mind. I'm an open book, so I don't mind saying it. I just want to do it in an appropriate way because I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus or, you know, things of that nature. And
unless you intend to throw them under the bus, because then that's when it feels good.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't feel good when you accidentally throw someone under the bus and then they call you and you're like, I didn't mean to. You know, exactly. I want to do it when I mean to, so then I can go damn straight, I threw you under the bus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. So I think, once again, I think it does boil down to this idea of trying to avoid pain and chase pleasure. We have this crazy idea in our head that if only, if I do this, or if I said this, or I can live this utopian lifestyle where I just feel great all the time and there's nothing bad. And mm-hmm. that's just not true. It doesn't exist. And so the mm-hmm. more we try to do that, the more frustrated and stressed and suffering we're going to experience. My mom says, you throw me in the... I do not. My mother was a great mother, by the way. And for those of you who are not watching live, my mother commented and said, you throw me under the bus all the time, which I don't.
So there's a common theme that I've noticed with you, Trinity.
What's that?
We got two people that I know of. I'm just counting two that know you from childhood that watch the show and comment on the show. Both of them say you attack them or have attacked them. And you always go, no, I didn't.
Well, first of all, I think you're referring
one to is going to be a Richard Coleman is going to be a commissioner of his area, but he's a politician. This is a well-respected politician. This guy is a successful business owner. This guy was on a NASCAR pit crew for Kyle Busch. This guy's he's not a nobody. And you every time he tells it, that you used to bully him, you say, no, I didn't. And that's even worse, Trinity. You bullied him, and then you don't even remember bullying him. You're I bullied him much that I don't even remember. He was so insignificant to me, I don't even remember bullying him.
I was a bully when I was younger because I got bullied.
Well, then why don't you admit it?
Because I don't remember bullying him. I'm not going to admit to something I don't remember.
Folks, we're going to have another show where Trinity admits being a bully, and just you can share your feelings, Trinity. You can
take advantage of the fact that it was 30 talk 40 about years it. Ago, and he's making stuff up.
And your mom, what's her reasoning for saying that you threw her under the bus all the time and you call her out on things? And what's your reason for her? She's such a nice woman.
She's an amazing grandmother and she was a great mother, but she was also a corrections officer who was very, very stern with me, which I needed, by the way. Like I absolutely needed.
So somehow yell at you one too many times? Did she hurt your feelings as a kid or something?
All the time.
So did mine. And mine was no corrections officer, but I thought I used to call her a mini Hitler. And it's no offense to Jewish people or anything like that. I'm not trying to make a direct comparison.
Oh, here we go.
Just saying that she was a mean woman. And sometimes, man, my mother was a tough little four-footer. She was a little four-footer that would pull your hair down so she could get you and then punch you right in the gut.
She's
a tough woman.
But no, I think it's I don't know. I really wanted to have the show today. I did, man, because I see it so much, man. Like it's such a weird, like it's one of those things when you know what it is, you just want to scream it at the top of your lungs so everybody can hear you, but it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
There's so many people that if they only knew, because it is within you, right? And what to me, and I would like to get your thoughts on this, but to me, what that looks like. It really does revolve around spirituality, I think. It's finding something bigger than yourself and having that guide you, right? I'm not saying that you only do that or that it takes over your life in some sort of way, but instead of trying to figure it out all on your own, like you're this island and you've got all the knowledge in your head, in your mind, relying on the paths that have been here long before you that have shown, like proven commodities, to lean into that a little bit. I really do think that is part of the answer, if not a major part of the answer, because I can't think of another thing that we can do on our own without any guidance that is the way, right? Because I think we've established that we don't know the way. Our own guidance is what's getting us in trouble. So we have to think outside of ourselves to something bigger. For me, that's what Buddhism was for me. That's what spirituality was for me, right? Because my emotions, I can't trust them. My emotions are going to change depending on how I'm feeling about the situation or which feeling it hurt. So in certain moments, I'm going to be volatile to things that I shouldn't be volatile to. In certain moments, I'm going to be more clingy to things that I shouldn't cling to. To whereas spirituality doesn't really change. It kind of, it's the same it's been for a long time. It's emotionless. And so if I were able to think of it that way and look at it through that spectrum, it helps me make better and more, thoughtful or skillful decisions because I'm no longer relying on something so volatile as my emotions at the time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to not define ourselves by the simplistic ways that other people may define you. Right. So, it's like when you say hi to somebody for the very first time, what is one of the first questions that we tend to ask another person?
What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
Yeah. We define ourselves by our occupation. We define ourselves by our connectivity to others. Like if we're married, if we're single, we define ourselves by the region that we're born in or where we live. But realistically, we ourselves shouldn't define ourselves by that. Let the world define us by that. That's fine. I mean, if that helps them categorize us or make decisions about us, then that's perfectly okay. But when you define yourself, you should define yourself more about the traits that you enjoy in other people. And hopefully you match those traits with yourself. Like,
right.
You know, like, hey, so what do you do for a living? Why tell the truth? You know, I mean, I love my kids and I love my wife. That's what I do for a living. I love other people. I mean, can you imagine just answering like that when someone says, no, I mean, like, what do you do for a living? How do you get paid? That's how I get paid. You know, it pays my heart and it pays my emotion. It fills my soul up with a lot of joy when I help other people, when I love my kids right, and when I love my wife right. I'm a very rich man. In those ways, you know, I mean, just think about it. When you think like that, and I'm being a little sarcastic and saying that you answer someone like that, but when you think like that about yourself, about the traits that you have, and if you're happy with those traits and you feel good about those traits, then continue to do those things. You're rewarding yourself and you'll feel good in your life. You know, it'll be harder for you to expose your button for someone to press it. It'll be harder for other people to use you or abuse you. It'll be harder for other people to somehow, change your world. You can't change my world. I manifest it. I create it. I surround myself with things that I love in it. And I kind of just stick to those things. What I've learned is the one control that I do have is that I do not have control over you guys. I do not have control over all the bad stuff that can happen. But I do have control of my immediate surroundings and my circle of influence. And so in doing that, I want to pay attention to, just keeping that happy, keeping that, as loving back to me as possible. And what I realize, if I love them and I treat them a certain way, they reciprocate, right? So it's beautiful. I keep that around me because it works for what I need. And when that is happening in a good way, I'm just more productive in the outside world. I'm able to love you guys that I know less. You're in an outer ring, because there's a lot of different rings, right? A lot of different circles of influence. Well, right. As long as that real tight circle of influence, I massage it right and I treat it right. Well, then the outer rings are easier to deal with. Whereas when I'm not doing well with those inner rings, meaning myself, if I'm treating myself poorly, I'm doing negative self-talk, I'm hating me in my life, none of the rings are going well. Then what you're trying to do then is trying to find satisfaction in an outer ring to somehow cure the core. But nothing in science has ever shown you that that's the way it works. Nothing out there is you cure the outside and the inside gets fixed. It's always inside out, right? It's always the root.
Yep.
The tree can have beautiful leaves, but if the root, if that strong piece of wood in the middle, if it's bad, if those roots are bad, it's going to die. The leaves are green today, but they're not. It's not going to last. The whole tree is going to die because that is the core. The core has to be healthy. It has to be good. And so what I love to do for myself, and if you would have told me this earlier, I wouldn't have liked it. Because when you use the word peace, I always laugh internally because I think
yeah, same.
If you would have told me peace, like I'm going to talk about peace and joy on the radio later in life, I would have said, "Oh shoot me now." There's no way I ever want to be on the radio talking about peace and joy. I should be on the radio talking about never
sex,
mind.
Drugs, just, and rock and roll.
Yeah, exactly. Because I started on a rock station. You know, I remember, matter of fact, that's a story for another day, but I remember my first stint in radio. You know, I was at a rock station on a morning show, and I was writing jokes for them, and then I'd go to work and be the dope doctor in training, you know what I mean? The early years of a counselor. Right. I was like, why am I doing this, man? And if they would have offered me more money and it would have been more than $7.50 an hour, I would have stayed in regular radio, and I would have been a rock jock doing that stuff back then. It would have never came around to this, but right. They offered me $7.50 an hour, and the other, the doctor offered me 50% of the kill. I took 50% of the kill. But anyway, so the point is that you may get in the way simply by not understanding what you need, because most of us are clueless about what we really need. We really don't know. Yep. We know what we want. That's easy. Knowing what you want and all that is much easier to define. It's much easier to write in a list. I mean, some of you have dream boards. Some of you have pictures in your house or on the wall, or a journal or something that says, these are the things that I want. But the need is very different. Need is much harder to define, much harder to pinpoint. And so my recommendation to you is that's where you put the emphasis. And wow, I'm going to work on the deeper need stuff of what makes me feel really good. And you can tell that by some of the things that you do. Whereas that's how I was able to find that I needed love. It sounds like an old LL Cool J song. I need love, you know, but I needed love, but I was trying to get it through sexual activity. I was trying to get it through, if I sell you drugs, you'll like me. If I had money and paid for everything, you would like me. If I made you laugh, you would like me. Instead of just getting around a more authentic person and just not even being concerned about doing anything to make her like me or love me, and just embracing the fact that she just does, instead of me trying to figure out why does she. You know, why does she love me? I'm a piece of shit. There's no way she loves me, because I told Dana all those things, man. I remember all our first dates. I was trying to push her away. I said, "You have no idea, girl. I'm going to prison. I'm going to prison. I'm here hiding. You don't want to be with me." And she would still be like, "Yeah, but why?" And then she was like so clueless to it. And I was like, "Girl, you have no idea what's happening on the outside world." I mean, our first movie together that we went to was Goodfellas, and I was saying, "See that? That helicopter's chasing me right now. Right now. That character is me right now. You just don't see it because, you know, I'm not using, so I'm not all, you know, sweaty and going crazy." I said, "But I see that helicopter everywhere right now." You know what I mean? And you know, luckily, you know, I got blessed enough with finding a person that saw beyond that and says, "Yeah, you're trying to push me away, but I'm not going anywhere." And I just stop being stubborn, and I stop pushing away. You know, if you want to find yourself, sometimes you're going to find yourself through someone else's eyes first. You know, it may not come through your eyes first, but just accept that the eyes that they're looking out of and the things that they're saying to you are things that maybe you need to be saying to yourself. And maybe that's the way you should be viewing yourself. And that's why I always say that, you know, Dana loved me before I loved myself. She said things about me and said things to me before I could say them to myself. And that's okay. You know, there's no one way to do this. So you had asked right from the beginning of the program, he says, we don't teach enough or talk enough about how do you love yourself or how do you find love. And I think the difficulty, Trinity, is because there's no one way to do it.
Correct. Well, there's no one way, but there's bad ways.
There are bad ways. Like you can't find it by distracting yourself, and you can't find it by trying to force it upon yourself, for sure. And you're not going to find it in drugs. You're not going to find it in alcohol. You're not going to find it in money. You're not going to find it in a job. You're not going to find it in sexual activity. You're not going to find it in all the superficial stuff, but you will find it in the words and the eyes of others. And there's people around you right now that I know it. I don't care who you are out there. Somebody's looking at you with certain type of eyes, and they're saying certain things, and you just don't believe them. You think they're lying to you. You think, no, you don't understand. It's because you don't really know what I've done. You don't know the things that I think about. You don't know the things that I've done in my life. That's why. But you know, you deserve somebody better. Just walk away. And that's not true. The way that person's looking at you and the way they're talking about you is a part of you that you need to get to know. That's the you that you need to get to know. And you need to accept that person, because that dork, that geek, that scared child is inside you. And that's okay. You're that too. Yeah, you're cool. Cool, but you're also a dork. Yeah, you're macho, but you're also scared and timid. We're all of that. We're every color of the rainbow. There you go, Trinity. Rainbow. We're every color of the freaking rainbow, man. We're all everything, right? So just let someone else tell you who you are, and stop telling the world that you're some big, bad, unlovable person that doesn't deserve jack, because you do.
Yeah, I mean, I echo all of that. Couldn't said it better myself. I'm going to assume that's your wrap up, because we're getting over an hour now, and that was profound.
Yeah, I'm done.
what I would say is in addition to all that, when I say the way, like, how do we do it? Uh-huh. I agree that there's no cookie cutter way, but I can tell you a couple of things that won't lead you astray. I can tell you some things that will at least spark that journey for you that is universal. And that is introspection. Look inward, you know, try to figure out who you are and why you do what you do. This idea of, oh, that's just who I am. That's who you've learned to be over your whole life. And so some of the behaviors that you've grown accustomed to of pushing people away, of searching for things, seeking for things, that's not necessarily who you are. That's who you've learned to be over your life. And in spirituality, right, in Buddhism, there's this one, the one that I probably means more to me is one called Vipassana. And Vipassana, it's roughly translated as self-transformation through self-observation. And that rings true to me. By just really sitting back and watching what you're doing and observing how you're thinking, what you're thinking, why you're doing what you're doing, and the true motivations behind it will be so revealing, because I don't think a lot of people actually do that. I don't think a lot of people really look inside and figure out, okay, what is it that I did? Why did I did that? Why did I do that? You know, why do I like this? Why do I dislike that? You know, what's the reasoning behind it? Because what you're going to find out is there's a cause and effect. Something happened somewhere that made that kind of be prevalent in your life. You know, if you're a runner, well, you weren't born a runner, right? Look at little kids. They're born loving and innocent and wonderful. They've learned to run. They've learned to get defensive. They've learned to be frustrated, angry, whatever. Well, you can unlearn it. And that's the cool part. But you can't do that unless you're aware of it. You got to pay attention. You got to look inward and ask these questions. And I think spirituality is a great way of helping you do that. But if spirituality is not something you're interested in, I would encourage you to look into why you're not interested in that. Maybe you have some preconceived notions of what it might be. But either way, find something bigger than yourself. Start looking inwards. Start doing some introspection. And start realizing that void that you're trying to fill, only you can fill it. You can't put that kind of pressure on a loved one or a spouse. You can't get it through friends because it's unsustainable and they'll never reach that bar. It's not going to happen. You're going to repeat the same cycle. You're going to find somebody and you put it all on their shoulders. And at first it feels great and they're filling that void perfectly. But very slowly but surely, after a certain amount of time, you're going to start to notice the cracks and they're not filling the void. And then you're going to start to get resentful of them because they're no longer filling the void. And you're going to think that they're doing something wrong. They're going to get resentful of you by saying, well, dude, I can't make you happy with it. And then it'll fall apart. And then you'll repeat it over and over and over again. And it doesn't have to be a spouse. It could be a thing. It could be an activity. It doesn't matter. If you keep looking outside yourself, you're going to keep getting disappointed. It has to come from within. And to me, the best way is self-introspection. You got to observe your thoughts, observe your feelings, figure out why you're doing what you're doing. And that could come through therapy. That could come through spirituality. That could come through reading. There's tons of as a species, we have so much knowledge at our fingertips right now, but we choose not to use it. You know, we'll watch crazy, you know, cat videos and stuff, but we won't read or look into a philosophy that's been around for thousands of years. You know, we got to get better at that. So anyways, you got anything else you want to add before we call this a day? Mr. Dope Doctor, I will plug our other shows, right? So today, if you're watching this live, right now is Tuesdays. Tuesdays normally around this time is when we do Dharma time. We talk about more spirituality, philosophy, those kinds of things. On Friday, this coming Friday, we're going to be doing a We the Middle, which is our political show. So if you're interested in politics and kind of, you know, how we kind of line up in the middle about those things, more specifically, this Friday is going to be about the Supreme Court ruling that looks like it's coming down. And then on Monday of next week, on Monday nights, we do the Couch Live, which is about drug and alcohol related issues. And more specifically, this coming Monday, we're going to be talking about self-medication on the Couch Live. And Dope Doctor's got something to say.
And on Friday's show, other than the Roe v. Wade, we're also going to talk about DeSantis's decision to make everybody, like, if you have a gun that you can carry without a concealed permit. Yeah, so we got to talk about that because there are multiple states that are doing it and there's a push to do it, and so let's have a conversation about it.
Yeah, I would love to. I have to look into that. I didn't even know that was a thing yet. So anyways, that's all we got. Appreciate you. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Make sure you follow us on social media. You can check us out at facebook.com/WPSN99. He's the Dope Doctor. I am the Dharma Guy, and that's all we got. So now that you know better, do better. Peace.